Well, hello everybody, and boys and girls, are you all ready for another night of Reading with Rick and some more stories? I'm ready to go. I hope you are too. It was a pretty nice day today. I got a lot done. Hope you got all your work done and now you're ready to settle down. And tonight we're going to read you some stories. I found a book here that I have. It's called 5-Minute Disney Pixar Stories. And they got a whole bunch of short stories about some of your favorite characters from Disney Pixar. So it says they're only 5 minutes long, so we're just going to read a whole bunch of them tonight. About 20 minutes worth. We'll see how that goes for us. Let's see. Finding Nemo, Toy Story, Cars, The Incredibles, A Bug's Life, Monsters, Inc., Up, WALL-E, Ratatouille. Those are all stories here in this book. Where should we start? Well, how about at the beginning? That's a good spot to start. Our second story tonight, we're going to go back to the Magic Treehouse with Jack and Annie. And last night they were in the Amazon, an afternoon on the Amazon tonight. Well, Jack and Annie are in bathing suits when the Magic Treehouse whisks them back to the Ice Age, where they meet cave people and woolly mammoths. And I'm sure there will be some danger. And that'll be our second story tonight. The Magic Treehouse, Sunset of the Sabretooth. That'll be our second book tonight. But let's get started with some stories from 5-Minute Disney Pixar Stories. We're going to go with Monsters, Inc., and this story is called Mike's Laughing Matter. Now, I bet you know some of these characters a lot better than I do, so I won't even try to do any voices. You know who Mike is in Monsters, Inc.? Beep, beep, beep. Mike Wazowski's eye popped open. He only has one big eye. He stretched his arms and grinned. It was time for work. He turned off his alarm clock and hopped out of bed. He didn't want to be late for his job at Monsters, Inc. Mike took his job. When Mike arrived at work, he headed straight to the locker room. His job was to go into the human world and make kids laugh. He collected the laughs and brought them back to Monsters, Inc. Then the company changed the laughs into energy for the city of Monstropolis. Mike wasn't just any employee. He was the top laugh collector. He was always coming up with new jokes. He's getting dressed in the locker room. He's putting his clown shoes on, and he's got a whoopee cushion and some funny glasses with a big nose and mustache on him, and a funny hat with bells on the end, all kinds of funny things in his locker. As Mike walked down the hall to the laugh floor, a furry orange monster named George waved. "Hi, Mike. Got any plans for the weekend?" Mike just nodded and kept walking. He didn't have time to chat if he was going to run through his route at his station. "Sneaker, want to hang out?" the sandal asked. The sneaker raced off. "Sorry, gotta run." Just then, a door dropped down from the ceiling into his station. "Time to rock and roll," Mike said, excited. Mike walked through the door and into a child out to his and the shades were. Mike tiptoed to the bed. A little boy lay sound asleep under the covers. Mike knew he wouldn't be collecting any laughs here. It seemed pretty early for bedtime, he thought, stepping back through the closet, Insters, Inc. He looked over at his empty laugh canister. Guess the kid had a busy day. Oh well, I'll just have to crack up someone else tonight. And a moment later, a new door slid down and Mike stepped through it. "You've got to be kidding," he whispered, his eye wide. His audience, a young girl, was asleep. She was even snoring. "I'm not going to give up," Mike declared. After all, he was the funniest monster at Monsters, Inc. Mike took a deep breath, returned to the laugh floor, and tried another door, then another. No luck. All the children he visited were asleep. What a terrible day, Mike grumbled as he walked back through his station door yet again. Then he packed up his belongings. Outside Monsters, Inc., a few monsters were talking with Sully, the president of the company and Mike's best friend. Mike went over and told his friends what had happened. "Doesn't anyone stay up past dinner?" he asked. George shrugged his furry orange shoulders. "I didn't have any problems." "I collected nearly a dozen canisters," said Charlie, a skinny green monster. "It was one of my best days ever." Sully patted Mike's arm. "Probably just a coincidence, pal. I'm sure tomorrow will be better. Why don't you come have dinner with us?" Mike shook his head. He needed to go home and write some more jokes. He was determined to have the most laughs that week. When Mike got home, his phone was ringing. It was his girlfriend, Celia. "How was work?" she asked. "Terrible," Mike said. "I didn't even fill up one canister." "Don't worry," Celia told him. "You're the funniest monster I know. The laughs will come. So, do you want to go to a movie on Saturday?" "Can I let you know tomorrow?" Mike asked. "Sure," Celia replied. Mike hung up the phone. He wrote 8 new jokes, reread them several times, and then hurried off to bed. The next day, Mike was bursting with excitement. What did the ghost serve at his birthday party? "Ice cream," he joked, warming up. But it happened again. Each time Mike stepped through a closet door, he found a sleeping child. What was going on? Mike stomped back to the laugh floor. This was nothing to laugh about. His reputation as the funniest monster at Monsters, Inc. was on the line. "What's the matter, Mike?" George asked. "You look cranky." "Want to grab a bite?" Sully suggested. Other monsters had started to look at Mike, wondering what was going on. "Not now," Mike said, pacing back and forth. "This is a disaster." "Maybe you're losing your touch," George said. "Maybe you should get some sleep," Charlie advised. Mike felt his face getting hot. "Listen." Suddenly, Mike noticed that Sully was grinning. And so were the other monsters. Even Celia's hair snakes were smiling. "Maybe you shouldn't take your laughs so seriously," Sully suggested with a wink. "What do you know about this?" Mike asked, suspicious. "We got you," George yelled, and he and Charlie high-fived. "Got me," Mike said, giving everyone a one-eyed stare. "The guys thought it was time to help you lighten up and laugh a bit more, Mike," Sully explained. "When was the last time you went to lunch with one of us? You haven't stopped to chat in weeks. And I heard Celia asked you to the movies on Saturday." "But, I mean, work has been," as Mike tried to explain that he took his jokes very seriously. Then he realized his friends were right. He had been trying so hard to collect laughs that he'd forgotten to have some of his own. He smiled. "Okay, how'd you do it?" he asked. "Well, when you weren't home, I snuck into your house and changed your clock," Charlie told him. "That's why the kids were all asleep when you walked into their bedrooms." As Mike looked at all the smiling monster faces around him, he realized how much his friends cared about him. He found himself finally beginning to relax, and then he let out a loud chuckle. Soon everyone on the laugh floor was cracking up. "I have to admit it, you guys really had me going," Mike said, wiping a happy tear from his eye. Sully grinned and said, "This time, the joke was on you." And that's that story. Was that about 5 minutes? Yeah, pretty close. Let's try another one. This is from A Bug's Life, The Search for the Perfect Gift. It was Queen Ada's birthday, and everyone on Ant Island had spent a whole week collecting gifts. The queen sat on her grassy throne as each ant presented a gift to her. "Oh, what a lovely berry," Queen Ada exclaimed at the first present. "It's so shiny and red." "I picked the biggest one I could find," an ant explained. Other ants brought pine cones, seeds, grain, and more treats. There was one ant, however, who didn't have a gift yet. His name was Flick. He was a clumsy but brilliant inventor, and he had a big crush on Queen Ada. He told Princess Dot, Ada's sister, about his present problem. "It can't be just any gift. It has to be the perfect gift," Flick explained. "But Ada will like whatever you give her," Dot told him. Flick shook his head. Atta is the queen now, so whatever I give her has to be worthy of royalty. I'm sure we will think of something if we work together, Dot suggested, and Flick smiled. That would be great, Dot. Thank you. So the two friends set out to look for the perfect gift. They looked high and they looked low. They looked under leaves and over toadstools. Suddenly, Dot cried out in excitement, "Look! I found a four-leaf clover!" And Flick ran over. Unfortunately, when they both examined it more closely, it was only a three-leaf clover. "Sorry, Flick," said Dot. "Don't worry about it," Flick said with a smile. "We'll find something." But something found them first. A hungry frog poked his head through the grass. "Look out!" Flick cried. Luckily, Flick and Dot escaped from the big frog. They took cover in a nearby patch of flowers. "Now what?" asked Dot. Flick thought and thought. Then he spotted a daisy. An idea started to bloom. "It's just a plain old daisy now," he explained to Dot, "but soon it'll be a merry-go-round for Atta." "Are you sure, Flick?" Dot asked, uncertain. Although Flick was very smart, his inventions often went wrong. Flick nodded. "Absolutely," he replied. "This is going to be great." Dot smiled. "Okay, how can I help?" "You can be the very first passenger," said Flick. "Hop on." But the ants soon realized that the daisy spun way too fast. "Whoa," cried Dot. "Whoops," Flick said. "Sorry about that." "That's okay," Dot told Flick. She still believed in him. Within a few minutes, Flick had a brand new idea. "Maybe Atta could use a nice cool breeze," he said. He placed a strong piece of grass around the daisy's stem. He would use the flower as a fan. "Get ready to chill, Dot." Dot sat down across from Flick and the daisy. "Okay, go," she shouted, and Flick gave a great big tug. Poor Dot. The wind from the daisy spinner sent the little ant high into the air. Dot beat her wings as fast as she could. She landed safely on the flower's stem. Flick scratched his head. "Boy, finding the perfect gift is really hard. Maybe you should just get Atta a card," Dot suggested. "I'll not give up," Flick declared, and he paced back and forth, racking his brain for ideas. "I'll build her a beach umbrella," he said aloud. "She has one already," Dot reminded him. "How about a sprinkler?" asked Flick. "If I just find a source of water to funnel into..." Dot smiled and shook her head. Flick sure was a determined inventor. Just then, Queen Atta walked by. "Hello, Dot." "Hello, Flick," she said. Then she noticed the fallen flower next to Flick. "Is that for me?" Flick looked at the ground and answered in a quiet voice, "Well, not really. It's just a plain old daisy." "There's nothing plain about it," said Queen Atta. "I think it's perfect." Dot grinned. "Me too." "Happy birthday, Atta," Flick and Dot said. Atta smiled. "Thank you, and thank you both for a perfect birthday present." Flick sat down next to Queen Atta. He realized that she was right. The daisy made the perfect gift, for it was a gift they could all enjoy together. That was a good story about bugs, a bug's life. Now, a story from Cars. You know Cars, don't you? I bet a lot of you know these characters. This story is called Radiator Springs Road Trip. It had been an exciting afternoon in Radiator Springs. Lightning McQueen had just been on TV talking about the big Piston Cup tiebreaker race. "Do you think you can beat Chick Hicks?" Sally the blue sports car asked. "Lightning can beat anybody," shouted Mater the tow truck. "I sure wish we were there to cheer him on." "Well," said Doc, the town judge and doctor, "I've been thinking about that. Maybe we should head on out there. He's still a rookie. He needs us." All of Lightning's friends hit the road, and the road to California was a long one. To keep from getting tired in the hot sun, the cars pulled over at a rest stop. Flo looked around and smiled. "I love Radiator Springs, but it sure is nice to take a trip from time to time." After resting for a while, the cars went on their way. Mater was leading the line. When he turned around to check on his friends, he didn't see Guido the forklift. Worried, Mater went to look for him. He found Guido at the end of the line. It was hot, and the little forklift had fallen behind. Mater offered to give him a tow. "I hope you don't mind looking at where we've been instead of where we're going," Mater said. Finally, the Radiator Springs gang arrived at the Los Angeles International Speedway. It was almost race time. Sarge took command. "Flo, oil stand over here. Guido, tires and tools right there. Pit stop," Guido shouted. Ramon was itching to do some painting. "Try snazzing up this pit. We need to show off our star car," Doc suggested. "Where's Lightning?" Matter wondered aloud. "Come on, Matter," said Doc. "Let's find the kid." There were so many cars around that Doc and Matter had trouble spotting Lightning. "There he is," Matter shouted. "Over there." Doc turned to look, but Lightning had already gone. Determined to find his friend, Matter began a search of his own. "Lightning McQueen," Mater shouted. "Where you at, buddy?" Mater spotted the tent for Rusty's, Lightning's racing sponsor. Maybe Lightning was in there. Inside, Mater found himself surrounded by rusty cars. "Hey, you're Tow Mater," said the old van. "Lightning's pal, we've heard about you." "How about a free sample, Mater?" said a grinning blue car. "It will take some of that rust off your bumper." "Rust on me? Where?" Mater asked, alarmed. Just then, Flo rushed in and took Mater away. "Come back soon," the rusty cars called. "Let's look for some decorations for Lightning's pit area," Flo suggested to Mater. Forgetting what he was actually looking for, Mater excitedly followed Flo to a truck that was selling lots of cool stuff. Mater picked out some snazzy antenna balls. "Oh, I like those," Flo said. Then she added some yellow banners that matched Lightning's team colors. "Looks like we're going to have a ball today," Mater joked. And Flo laughed. "Good one, Mater," she said. Meanwhile, Doc had gone to the other side of the track to check out the competing crews. As he neared Chick Hicks' tent, he heard something bad, very bad. "I'm winning this time, no matter what I have to do," Chick told his crew. "I'm going to force the king and that smart-alecky rookie off the track. The cup is mine, boys." Doc knew he had to warn Lightning that Chick was up to his usual dirty tricks. But where was Lightning? Doc found Mater and told him about Chick's plan. "We got to warn Lightning," yelled Mater. "This area is for press only," said a tough-looking SUV guard. "Hey, that's Doc Hudson you're talking to," Mater said. The guard stood his ground. "No one gets through, and that's final." Doc turned away. It looked like he wasn't going to get to Lightning in time. "Sorry to let you down, kid," he said quietly. Mater didn't like seeing Doc look so sad. What could he do to cheer him up? "Here, Doc, this is for you," Mater said, tossing Doc one of the antenna balls. "It has Lightning's number on it. We're part of his team. He needs us." Doc grinned. "You're right, Mater. We came here to help our friend, and that's exactly what we're going to do." Mater spun around and let out a holler. "Hoo-wee! Here we come, Lightning!" "Let's get to the pit," Doc said, "and tell Ramon I need a special paint job, Mater." That is what friendship is all about, Doc thought as he drove up to the crew chief platform. The crowd roared as Doc stood there proudly. Ramon finished painting the blazing words on Doc's side. "Fabulous Hudson Hornet," it said. As Lightning made a turn around the track, he saw his Radiator Springs friends in the pit crew area. They'd come all the way to California to cheer him on. "Hey, kid, keep an eye on Hicks," Doc said over his radio headset. "He's up to no good." But Lightning wasn't worried. He knew that Doc and Mater and all his friends were looking out for him. Newly energized, Lightning revved his motor and took off down the racetrack. And that's the end of that car story. We have time for one more. Let's do one. Let's see. Let's find. Should we do a Toy Story one? Let's do one from the Toy Story tonight. This is called A New Mission. Andy was leaving for college, and his toys were heading to the attic. But Sarge and his green army men had a different plan. They climbed up to the windowsill. "Hey, Sarge, what are you doing?" asked Buzz. "War's over, folks," Sarge replied. "We're moving on." Sarge explained that their tour of duty in Andy's room was complete. It was time he and his troops took up a new mission. With one final salute, Sarge and his men jumped off the windowsill. They opened their parachutes and flew across the city. Operation New Home was a go. The three army men landed near a toy store. It would be the perfect place to find a child. Before long, the soldiers spotted a boy and his mother walking toward them. "This child is military material," Sarge whispered. "On your marks, gentlemen. Go, go, go!" He and his men jumped into the mother's shopping bag. But the soldiers weren't taken home for playtime. The mother made a stop at a bakery. As the boy reached for a giant cookie, he knocked one of the shopping bags over, and the army men tumbled to the floor. After the boy left, the baker spotted the toys. He picked them up and took them into his kitchen, delighted at what he thought were new cake decorations. After giving them a good wash, the baker placed the green army men on a birthday cake, and then he put the cake in the refrigerator. "Looks like we're in for a long, cold night," Sarge said with a sigh. As soon as morning came, the soldiers were placed in a box and carried out the door. They were on the move again. When the lid of the cake box was finally lifted, Sarge and his men discovered that they were in the middle of a birthday party. "Green Army men, cool!" exclaimed the birthday boy. He plucked the soldiers off the cake and set them aside. "This could be it, men," whispered Sarge. "This boy could lead us to our new home." The soldiers nodded in agreement. Their mission was back on track. The soldiers watched as the boy enjoyed his party, but then, somehow, they lost sight of him. Sarge scanned the room. "Target is heading for the exit. Let's move, move, move!" The army men followed the boy out the front door, but they were too late. He was gone. Before the green army men could retreat, a pizza delivery truck screeched to a stop near them. The driver honked his horn. A waiter came out of the restaurant carrying a stack of pizza boxes. "It's about time," he grumbled to the driver. "Take these to the Wilderness Explorer picnic. There are a lot of hungry kids waiting for lunch." Sarge looked at his men and smiled. Then he climbed onto the truck. The truck weaved in and out of traffic. Suddenly it hit a bump, causing one of the cadets' parachutes to open. Sarge grabbed onto the soldier as he began to lift off the roof of the van. The other soldier held on to Sarge. The wind was strong. They couldn't hold on much longer. "Go on without me," the cadet called out. But Sarge knew better. A good soldier never leaves a man behind. All three soldiers flew off the truck and landed on the side of the road. As night fell, the soldiers made a tent out of a newspaper. The cadets went to bed, but Sarge stayed awake, wondering when and where they would find their new home. The next morning, the unit awoke to a loud rumble. Their makeshift shelter was lifted into the air and then tossed into a trash can with Sarge still inside. Sarge looked down to see his soldiers safe in the bushes below. Then he was thrown into the back of a garbage truck. The trash man hopped aboard his truck and drove off. Sarge struggled to keep his head above the garbage. Just as he was about to sink beneath the plastic bags, he looked up and saw his cadets. They had come to his rescue. Working together, the other soldiers lowered themselves into the garbage truck. Sarge reached out and grabbed the hand of one of the cadets. "Never leave a man behind, sir," the soldier said. The troop jumped off the truck and landed in an alley. Sarge looked at his tired troops and sighed. Maybe leaving Andy's house wasn't such a good idea after all. At that moment, the men heard laughter coming from the other side of a wall. They climbed up and peered over. Sarge gasped. Below them was a beautiful playground. Could this be their new home? They parachuted over for a closer look. A group of toys greeted the soldiers with open arms. "Welcome to Sunnyside Daycare." Ken and Barbie gave the troops a tour of the playground and classrooms. Everything was new and improved now that their old boss, Lotso, wasn't there anymore. Sarge pulled his men aside and explained that Sunnyside felt like the home they were looking for. The cadets agreed. The next morning, Sarge proudly watched his men experience a full day of play at Sunnyside. The troops were finally home. Mission accomplished. And that's a story from Toy Story. And that'll put an end to our 5-minute Disney Pixar stories tonight. That was a lot of fun, a lot of different stories in that one. It was kind of fun to switch from story to story and always keep on the go and wondering what was going to happen next. So that was a fun one for that. And now we're going to take our break and come back and go back to the Magic Treehouse with Jack and Annie and the Sunset of the Sabretooth. So those of you that are heading off to bed, you have a good night tonight. And those of you that are staying with me, I'll be back in just a few. We are back on Reading with Rick tonight, and we get ready for our second story of the night, and this is back to the Magic Treehouse, and this one tonight is called Sunset of the Sabretooth. Sunset of the Sabretooth is tonight's second story. The prologue tonight. One summer day in Frog Creek, Pennsylvania, a mysterious treehouse appeared in the woods. 8-year-old Jack and his 7-year-old sister Annie climbed into the treehouse. They found it was filled with books. Jack and Annie soon discovered that the treehouse was magic. It could take them to the places in the books. All they had to do was point to a picture and wish to go there. Jack and Annie visited dinosaurs, knights, an Egyptian queen, pirates, ninjas, and the Amazon rainforest. Along the way, they discovered that the treehouse belonged to Morgan Le Fay. Morgan was a magical librarian. She traveled through time and space, gathering books for King Arthur's library. On their 5th adventure in Night of the Ninjas, Jack and Annie found a little mouse in the treehouse. Annie named their new friend Peanut. Jack and Annie also found a note from Morgan. The note told him that she was under a spell. To free her, Jack and Annie must find 4 special things. They found the first thing in old Japan and the second in the Amazon rainforest. Now, Jack and Annie and Peanut are about to set out in search of the third thing in Sunset of the Sabretooth. Chapter 1. The M Things. "Let's go to the treehouse," said Annie. She and Jack were passing the Frog Creek Woods on their way home from their swimming class at the Y. "No, I want to go home and change out of my bathing suit," said Jack. Oh, that'll take too long, said Annie. Don't you want to save Morgan as soon as possible? Of course, said Jack. Then come on, before the sun sets, said Annie, and she darted into the woods. Jack sighed. He gave up on the idea of changing out of his bathing suit. He pushed his glasses into place and followed Annie into the Frog Creek woods. The warm air smelled fresh and green. He moved through patches of sunlight and shadow. Soon he came to a small clearing. He looked up, and there it was, the magic treehouse in the tallest tree in the woods. Hurry, called Annie. She was already climbing the rope ladder up the treehouse. Jack grabbed the ladder and started up after her. Finally, they reached the treehouse. Squeak! A mouse sat on the windowsill. Hi, Peanut, cried Annie, and Jack patted the tiny head of the mouse. Sorry we didn't come sooner, Annie said, but we had to go to our swimming lesson. Squeak! What happened while we were gone? Asked Annie, looking around the treehouse. Jack stared at the large M carved into the wooden floor. On the M were a moonstone and a mango, the special things they'd found on their last two journeys. Hey, guess what? Said Jack. Moonstone and mango start with the letter M, just like Morgan. You're right, said Annie. I bet all four things start with an M, said Jack. Right, said Annie. I wonder where we'll find the next one. She and Jack stared at the stacks of books in the treehouse. Books on the Amazon, rainforest, ninjas, pirates, mummies, knights, and dinosaurs. All of them were closed. Only one book lay open in the corner. We're just about to find out, said Jack, and he walked over to the open book. They looked at the page that the book was open to. It showed a picture of rocks and snow. Wow, said Annie, running her finger over the picture. I love snow. I wish we could go there right now. Wait, said Jack. We're not prepared. Then he had another thought. And we're wearing our bathing suits. Stop! Whoops, said Annie, but it was too late. The wind started to blow. The leaves started to shake. The treehouse started to spin, and it spun faster and faster. And then everything was silent. It was as silent as the falling snow. Chapter 2. Bones. Jack, Annie, and Peanut looked outside. Snow was falling from a gray sky. The treehouse was in the tallest tree in a grove of tall, bare trees. The grove was on a wide, white plain. Beyond the plain were high, rocky cliffs. I'm cold, said Annie, and her teeth chattered. She wrapped her towel tightly around her. Squeak! Peanut sounded cold, too. Poor mouse, said Annie. I'll put you into Jack's pack. You'll be warmer there. Annie slipped Peanut into the pocket of the backpack. We have to go home, said Jack. We need warmer clothes. We can't go home, said Annie. We can't find the Pennsylvania book. Not until our mission is complete, remember? That's the way the magic works. Oh, right, said Jack, and he looked around. There was no sign of the Pennsylvania book that always took them home. Annie peered out the window again. Where are we anyway? She asked. I'll find out, said Jack. He picked up the open book and read the title on the cover. Life in the Ice Age. Ice Age, said Annie. No wonder we're cold. We better find the third M thing soon, said Jack, before we freeze to death. Look, whispered Annie, people, and she pointed out the window. Jack saw them too, four figures on a cliff, two big figures and two little ones. They all held long spears. Who are they? Said Annie. I'll look in the book, said Jack. He found a picture of some people. He read the caption to Annie. Early modern humans were called Cro-Magnons. During the late Ice Age in Europe, they sometimes lived in caves beneath cliffs. Why are they carrying spears? Said Annie. Jack turned the page. He found another picture of the Cro-Magnons, and he read aloud. The Cro-Magnon family often hunted together. They covered deep pits with branches. Then they drove reindeer and mammoths into the traps. Oh, trapping the animals, that's sad, said Annie. No, it's not, said Jack. They couldn't live without hunting. They didn't have supermarkets, you know. They watched the family disappear over the other side of the cliff. Come on, I'm freezing, said Jack. Let's hurry and find the M thing while the Cro-Magnons are hunting. But I want to meet them, said Annie. Forget it, said Jack. They don't have books that tell them about us. They'll think we're some enemy and hurl their spears. Yikes, said Annie, and Jack put his book away. Squeak, Peanut peeked out of the backpack. Stay in there, said Annie, and Jack pulled on his pack and started down the rope ladder. Annie followed. On the icy ground, they huddled together. The wind was biting. Jack put his towel over his head. Snow blew against his glasses. Hey, Jack, said Annie, look at me. Annie had put on her swimming goggles. Now I can see, she said. Good thinking, said Jack. Now cover your head with your towel. Most of your body heat is lost through your head. Annie wrapped her towel around her head. We should find a cave or someplace warmer, said Jack. I bet there are caves in those cliffs, said Annie. She and Jack started across the white plain. The snow wasn't deep yet, but the wind was blowing hard. I told you, Annie pointed to an opening in the rocks, a cave. They ran to it. Careful, said Jack, and they stepped carefully into the shadowy cave. It was only slightly warmer inside, but at least the wind wasn't blowing. In the gray light, they stamped the snow off their sneakers. Annie took off her goggles. It smells in here, said Jack. Yeah, like a wet dog, said Annie. Let me see what I can find out, said Jack, and he pulled out the Ice Age book. I'll look around, said Annie. Maybe the M thing is here. Then we can go home and get warm. Jack stood by the entrance so he could read the book. This cave is filled with sticks, Annie said. What, said Jack? He didn't look up from the book. No, wait. I think they're bones, said Annie. Bones, echoed Jack. Yeah, lots of them back here, all over the floor. Jack turned the pages of his book. He found a picture of a cave filled with bones. I hear something, said Annie. Jack read the writing below the picture of the cave. It said, the great cave bears of the Ice Age were over 8 feet tall. These bears were larger and fiercer than today's grizzlies. Their caves were filled with the bones of their ancestors. Annie, whispered Jack, get back here now. They were in the cave of a great cave bear. Chapter 3. Brrr. Annie, whispered Jack again, but there was no answer. He put his book quietly into his pack. He stepped deeper into the cave. Annie, he said a little louder. Jack stepped on the bones. The wet dog smell grew stronger. He kept going deeper into the smelly blackness. He ran into something. He gasped. Jack, said Annie, is that you? Didn't you hear me calling? Jack whispered. We have to get out of here. Wait, she said. Someone's sleeping back there. Hear him snoring? Jack heard a low, deep moaning. It was loud, then soft, loud, then soft. That's not a person, he said. It's a great cave bear. And a booming snore shattered the air. Yikes, said Annie. Go, go, said Jack. And he and Annie ran through the cave, over the bones and out into the falling snow. They kept on going. They ran between fallen rocks and under jagged cliffs. Finally, they stopped and turned around. All they could see was snow and rocks and their own footprints. No bear. Woo, said Annie, that was lucky. Yeah, said Jack, he probably never even woke up. We just got in a panic. Annie huddled close to Jack. Brr, I'm freezing, she said. Me too, he said. He took off his glasses to wipe off the snow. The cold wind blew against his bare legs. Wow, Annie said, look. And she pointed to something behind Jack. What? Jack put his glasses back on and turned around. Under a cliff was a wide ledge. Under the ledge was another cave. Only this cave seemed to have a golden glow. This one looked cozy and safe and warm. Chapter 4. Cave Kids. Jack and Annie crept to the cave and peeked inside. A small flame danced from a bed of glowing coals. Near the fire were knives and axes and hollowed-out stones. Animal skins were neatly stacked against the wall. People must live here, said Annie. Maybe it's the home of the Cro-Magnons we saw, said Jack, looking around. Let's go inside and get warm, said Annie. Jack and Annie moved quickly to the fire and warmed their hands. Their shadows danced on the stone walls. Jack pulled out his Ice Age book, and he found a picture of a cave. He read, Cro-Magnons made many things from animals, plants, and stone. They made flute-like musical instruments from mammoth bones. They made ropes by braiding plant fibers, and they made axes and knives from stone. Jack pulled out his notebook and pencil, and he started a list. Cro-Magnons made bone flutes, plant ropes, stone axes, and knives. Ta-da! Said Annie, and Jack looked up. Annie was wearing a coat. It had a hood and long sleeves. It went all the way down to her sneakers. Where did you get that? Said Jack. From that pile of furry skin, said Annie, pointing. These must be their clothes. Maybe they're being mended. She picked up another coat and handed it to Jack. Try one. It's really warm, she said. Jack put his backpack and towel down on the hard dirt floor, and he slipped on the coat. It did feel very warm and soft. We look like cave kids, said Annie. Squeak! Peanut peeked out of Jack's pack, lying on the floor. You stay in there, said Annie. There's no teeny coat for you. And Peanut vanished back inside the pack. I wonder how they made these coats, said Jack. He turned the pages in the book until he found a picture of Cro-Magnon women sewing, and he read, Cro-Magnon scraped reindeer skins with flint rocks to make them soft. They used bone needles to sew the skins together for clothing. Jack added to his list, reindeer skin clothes. I hope the cave people won't mind if we borrow their coats, said Jack. Maybe we should give them our towel, said Annie, to thank them. Good idea. And my goggles, too, said Annie. They left their gifts on top of the rest of the animal skins. Let's explore the cave before they come home, said Jack. It's too dark in the back, said Annie. We won't be able to see anything. I'll find out how Cro-Magnon saw in the dark, said Jack, and he opened the Ice Age book. He found a picture of cave people holding odd-looking lamps. He read aloud to Annie. Cro-Magnons made stone lamps. They hollowed out a rock, filled it with animal fat, then burned a wick made from moss. There, said Annie, and she pointed to two stones near the fire. In the hollow of each was gooey white stuff and a pile of moss. We have to be careful, said Jack. He picked up one stone. It was smaller than a soup bowl, but much heavier. Jack held the stone close to the fire and lit the piece of moss. He lit another lamp and gave it to Annie. Carry it with two hands, he said. I know, she said. And Jack tucked the book under his arm. He and Annie carried their stone lamps to the back of the cave. Hey, I wonder where this goes, said Annie. She held her lamp up to an opening in the wall. I'll check in the book, said Jack. He put down his lamp and flipped through the Ice Age book. I think it's a tunnel, she said. Be right back. Wait a second, said Jack, but too late. She had squeezed into the opening and was gone. Oh, brother, said Jack, sighing. He closed his book and peeked into the opening. Come back here, he said. No, you come here, said Annie. Her voice sounded far away. You won't believe this. Jack picked up his lamp and book. He ducked into the small tunnel. Wow, came Annie's voice. Jack could see her lamp flickering at the other end. Crouching down, he hurried toward her. At the end of the tunnel was a huge cavern with a high ceiling. Annie held her lamp close to the wall. Look, she said, and her voice echoed. Animals were painted on the wall in strokes of red and black and yellow. There were cave bears and lions, elk and reindeer, bison and woolly rhinos and mammoths. In the flickering light, the prehistoric beasts looked alive. Chapter 5. Snow Tracks. Wow, what is this place? Said Jack. Maybe it's an art gallery, said Annie. I don't think so, said Jack. It's too hard to get to. He read about the cave paintings. These Ice Age beasts were painted 25,000 years ago. Cro-Magnons painted pictures of animals they hunted. they may have believed the paintings would give them power over the animals. "Wow, look at this," said Annie, and she pointed at a painting further down the wall. It showed a figure with human arms and legs, reindeer antlers, and an owl face. It seemed to be holding a flute. Jack looked at the book again and found a picture of the figure and read, "Cavemen may have been led by a sorcerer or master of the animals. He may have worn reindeer antlers so he could run like a reindeer and an owl mask so he could see like an owl." "What is it?" said Annie. "The master of the animals," said Jack. "He's a sorcerer." "Oh, wow," breathed Annie. "That's it."
"That's what?"
"That's who we have to find. Why, maybe he's a friend of Morgan," said Annie. Jack nodded slowly.
"Maybe," he said.
"Let's go find him," said Annie. And they went back through the tunnel into the first cave.
"We better put our lamps back," said Jack.
He and Annie blew out their lamps. They placed them back by the fire. Jack's backpack was on the floor next to the skins. He put the Ice Age book into it.
"How's Peanut?" said Annie.
Jack looked into his pack.
"She's not here," he said.
"Oh, no," cried Annie. "She must have crawled out when we were looking at the paintings."
"Peanut!" Jack called.
"Peanut!" called Annie. Annie walked slowly around the cave, looking into the shadows. Jack peered around the fire and under each of the furry skins.
"Jack, come here," said Annie.
She was standing near the entrance to the cave. The snow had stopped falling. In the snow were tiny tracks. Chapter 6, Song on the Wind.
"Peanut's tracks," said Annie. "We have to find her before she freezes."
She wrapped her reindeer coat around her and headed across the snow. Jack pulled on his backpack and followed. The mouse tracks led them between the fallen rocks and back onto the open plain. The wind blew harder. Snow swirled over the ground, covering the tiny footprints.
"I can't see them anymore," wailed Annie.
She and Jack now stood in the middle of the plain. They stared at the wind-swept snow. The mouse's tracks had vanished.
"Yikes," whispered Annie, staring up,
and Jack followed her gaze. On one of the cliffs was a tiger, a giant tiger with two long, sharp fangs. "A saber-tooth," said Jack.
"I hope he doesn't see us," whispered Annie.
"Me too," Jack whispered back. "We'd better head back to the treehouse." Jack and Annie stepped very softly across the snow. Then Jack glanced back at the cliff. The saber tooth was gone.
"Oh, man," he said, "where is he?"
"Run to the trees," said Annie. He and Annie started running. They ran over the snowy plain, heading toward the tall bare trees in the distance. And suddenly, Jack heard a crack, and the ground caved in, and Jack went with it. Annie fell beside him. They crashed down into a heap of branches, snow, and earth. They struggled to stand. Jack pushed his glasses into place.
"You all right?" he asked Annie.
"Yes," she said. They both looked up. They were in a deep hole. All Jack could see were gray clouds moving overhead.
"This is a trap," Jack said.
"The Cro-Magnons must have put branches over this hole. Then the snow hid the branches, so we didn't see them."
"There's no way out," said Annie.
She was right. They were helpless. The pit was too deep to climb out of.
"I feel like a trapped animal," Annie said.
"Me too," said Jack. He heard a yowl in the distance.
"The saber tooth," whispered Annie.
Jack pulled out the Ice Age book. He found a picture of the saber tooth. He read, "The saber tooth was the fiercest beast of the Ice Age. It attacked humans as well as woolly mammoths and other large animals."
"Oh, brother," said Jack.
"Listen," Annie grabbed him.
"What?" Jack jumped.
"I hear music."
Jack listened, but all he heard was the wind.
"You hear it?" said Annie.
"No," said Jack.
"Listen carefully." He closed his eyes. He listened very carefully. He heard the wind, but this time he heard another sound too. Strange, haunting music.
"Ah!" cried Annie,
and Jack opened his eyes. Staring down at them was a figure wearing reindeer antlers and an owl mask.
"The sorcerer," whispered Jack. Squeak! Peanut peered down at them, too. Chapter 7, The Sorcerer's Gift. The sorcerer didn't speak. He stared through the eye holes of the owl mask. Help us, please, said Annie. The sorcerer threw a rope into the pit, and Jack grabbed it. He wants to pull us up, said Annie. Jack looked up. The sorcerer was gone. Where did he go? Jack said. Tug on the rope, said Annie. Jack tugged. The rope tightened. It began rising. I'll go first, said Annie, cheerfully. Annie, this isn't a game, warned Jack. Don't worry, I'll be careful. Jack gave her the rope. Okay, but hold on tight, he said. Annie held the rope with both hands. She pushed her feet against the side of the pit. She rose into the air with the rope. She kept pressing against the side of the pit until she reached the top. Jack saw the sorcerer reappear and help Annie up. Then they moved out of sight. Jack was puzzled. The sorcerer had used both hands to help Annie, so who held the other end of the rope? Wow, came Annie's voice. What's going on? Jack wondered. The sorcerer came back and threw the rope down again. Jack grabbed it, and the rope started to rise. Jack held on tight. He started up. His hands burned. His arms felt as if they were being pulled out of their sockets. But he kept his hold on the rope and his feet against the side of the pit. At the top, the sorcerer pulled Jack onto the snowy ground. Thanks, said Jack, standing. The sorcerer was tall. He wore a long fur robe. Jack could see only his eyes through the owl mask. Hey, Annie called, and Jack turned. Annie was sitting on a woolly mammoth. Squeak! Peanut was sitting on the mammoth's head. The mammoth looked like a giant elephant with shaggy reddish hair and long curved tusks. The other end of the rope was around the mammoth's huge neck. Lulu pulled us up, said Annie. Lulu, said Jack. Don't you think she looks like a Lulu, said Annie. Oh, brother, said Jack as he walked up to the mammoth. Hey, mammoth starts with M, said Annie, and maybe Lulu's the special thing. I don't think so, said Jack. The great creature knelt down just like a circus elephant. Whoa, said Annie, and she clutched the mammoth's ears to keep from falling off. The sorcerer helped Jack climb onto the mammoth. Thanks, said Jack. Then the sorcerer reached into a pouch. He pulled out a smooth white bone and handed it to Jack. The bone was hollow. It had four holes along one side and two on the other. Oh, man, I think it's his flute, said Jack. The book said they make flutes from mammoth bones. Jack tried to give the flute back to the sorcerer. Nice, he said politely, but the sorcerer held up his hand. He wants you to keep the mammoth bone, said Annie. Mammoth bone, whispered Jack. Hey, maybe this is the third thing. Jack looked at the sorcerer. Do you know Morgan, he asked. The sorcerer did not answer, but his eyes sparkled with kindness. He turned away from Jack and untied the mammoth's rope. Then he whispered in the ear of the giant woolly creature. When the mammoth stood up, Jack gripped Annie's coat to keep from falling off. He felt miles above the ground. He nestled behind Annie in the dip between the mammoth's head and huge curved back. The mammoth took slow, plodding steps across the snow, then picked up speed. Where are we going? Said Jack as they bumped up and down. To the treehouse, said Annie. How does he know where it is? Said Jack. She just knows, said Annie, and Jack looked back. The sorcerer was standing in the snow, watching them. But at that moment, the clouds parted, and the sun came out. Jack was blinded by sunlight on the snow. He squinted to see, but the sorcerer had vanished. Chapter 8, The Great Parade. The huge mammoth walked across the open plain. Look, said Annie, and she pointed to a herd of elk in the distance. They had great wide antlers. There, said Jack, as a herd of reindeer came into view. They pranced gracefully across the snow. Then a woolly rhino joined them on the open plain. Then a bison. The elk, reindeer, rhino, and bison moved along with them at a distance. They seemed to be escorting Jack and Annie back to the treehouse. The snow sparkled with sunlight. This is a great parade, Jack thought. Fantastic! They were getting closer and closer to the grove of tall trees. I told you, said Annie, Lulu's taking us home. But just then the mammoth let out a cry and all the other animals bounded off. Peanut started to squeak. Jack looked around. Behind them, the saber-tooth was slinking across the sunlit snow. The woolly mammoth roared and plunged forward. Jack and Annie nearly fell off. Jack clutched Annie. She and Peanut clutched the mammoth's shaggy hair. The mammoth thundered wildly over the ground. Ah! Jack and Annie yelled. The mammoth charged to the grove of trees. But the tiger had circled around the trees. He stood between the tallest tree and the mammoth. They were trapped. The saber-tooth began moving slowly toward the mammoth. The woolly mammoth roared fiercely. But Jack knew a saber-tooth could kill any creature, including a mammoth. The huge tiger's head was down. His burning eyes were fixed on the mammoth. His long white fangs glinted in the sunlight. Chapter 9. Master of the Animals. The saber-tooth crept forward. Jack stared in horror.
Play the flute, whispered Annie. Is she nuts, Jack thought. Try, said Annie.
Jack held the mammoth bone flute to his lips, and he blew. The flute made a strange sound. The tiger froze. He glared at Jack. Jack's hands shook. The tiger growled. He took another step. The mammoth roared and stomped the ground.
Play it, said Annie. Keep playing.
Jack blew again. The saber-tooth froze again. Jack kept blowing until he ran out of breath. The tiger snarled.
He's still here, whispered Annie. Keep it up.
Jack closed his eyes. He took a deep breath. Then he blew as hard and as long as he could. He covered and uncovered the holes on the bone. The music sounded strange, as if it were coming from another world.
He's leaving, Annie whispered.
Jack raised his eyes. The saber-tooth was slinking off toward the cliffs.
We did it, said Annie.
Jack lowered the flute. He felt very tired. The mammoth waved her trunk happily.
To the treehouse, Lulu, said Annie.
The woolly mammoth snorted. Then she lumbered over to the tallest tree. From the back of the mammoth, Jack grabbed the rope ladder. He held it for Annie. She stroked the mammoth's giant ear.
Bye, Lulu. Thank you, she said.
Annie grabbed the rope ladder. Then she started up. Peanut climbed up, too. After they disappeared into the treehouse, Jack climbed onto the ladder, and he looked back at the woolly mammoth.
Bye, girl, he said. Go home now, and watch out for the saber-tooth.
The mammoth walked away into the sunset. When Jack couldn't see her anymore, he started up the rope ladder. He pulled himself into the treehouse.
Ta-da, said Annie, and she handed the Pennsylvania book to Jack.
Jack smiled. Now he was positive they had found the third M thing. Their mission was complete.
Before we leave, we have to give our coats back, said Annie.
Oh, right, said Jack. And they took off their reindeer skin coats and dropped them to the ground.
Brr, said Annie. I hope the Cro-Magnon people find them.
Jack stared out the window. He wanted to take one last look at the prehistoric world. The sun was setting behind the hills. Four people were crossing the snowy plain. It was the Cro-Magnon family.
Hey, shouted Annie.
Shh, said Jack. The Cro-Magnon stopped and peered in Annie and Jack's direction.
We left your reindeer skins down there,
and Annie pointed to the ground. The tallest person stepped forward and raised a spear.
Time to go, said Jack.
He grabbed the Pennsylvania book. He found the picture of Frog Creek and pointed at it.
I wish we could go home, he said. Goodbye and good luck,
Annie called, waving out the window, and the wind started to blow, and the treehouse started to spin, and it spun faster and faster.
And then everything was still. Absolutely still.
Chapter 10. This Age. Birds sang. The air was soft and warm.
I hope they find their coats, said Annie. Me too, said Jack, and he pushed his glasses into place.
Squeak! Hey, you, how did you find the sorcerer? Annie asked Peanut. Squeak!
It's a secret, huh? Said Annie. She turned to Jack. Where's the flute?
He held up the mammoth bone. Then he placed it on the M carved into the floor. Next to the mango from the rainforest, next to the moonstone from the time of ninjas.
Moonstone, mango, mammoth bone, Annie said. We just need one more M thing. Then Morgan will be free from her spell.
Tomorrow, said Jack.
Annie patted Peanut on the head. Bye, you, she said, and started down the rope ladder. Jack gathered his things. He paused and glanced at the mouse. She stared at him with big brown eyes. Thanks again for helping us, he said. Then he climbed down the rope ladder and jumped onto the ground. Jack and Annie ran through the Frog Creek woods onto their street. Their neighborhood looked rosy in the sunset. It's great to be back in this age, Jack thought. Warm and safe and almost home.
I'm glad we didn't have to go hunting for dinner, he said.
Yeah, Mom and Dad already did that, said Annie, at the supermarket.
I hope they trapped some spaghetti and meatballs, said Jack.
I hope they trapped a pizza, said Annie.
Hurry, I'm starving, said Jack, and they ran up their sidewalk and through their front door.
We're home, shouted Annie.
What's for dinner, shouted Jack.
And that's the end of Sunset of the Sabretooth. Another fun adventure from the Magic Treehouse, written by Mary Pope Osborne.
Well, that'll do it for tonight. We'll come back again tomorrow night. That'll be Wednesday night, won't it? More fun stories coming your way. I look forward to having you join me again every night. I always love it when I know that you're sitting there listening closely and using your imagination as I tell you the stories. I can almost see your mind picturing all those scenes as they happen and as you hear them. So, you have a good night's sleep, have a great day tomorrow, and it's the middle of the week already. So we'll see you tomorrow night for more Reading with Rick, okay? Good night, kids.